Welcome to Guerrilla Radio. You know that we're broadcasting from the basement of the Student Union building at the University of Victoria, CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, CFUV.ca, everywhere else. Well, and welcome to the new post-pandemic outbreak breakdown of Guerrilla Radio. As regular listeners will know, CFUV has shuttered the studios, so live interviews are no longer possible. What I'll present in the new Not Normal are live-to-Skype interviews on the most pressing issues of this weird moment. And whether self-imposed or state-directed, social isolation is here and promises to become more comprehensive. So what does it mean to become separated from people and activities, from your life, essentially? Janine Bancroft is an educator and social events publisher, broadcaster, and she is, too, the Green Vegan Grandma on YouTube, where her latest video, What to Do When There's Nothing to Do, appears. Janine decided to self-isolate early on in the coronavirus crisis, and so has a head start on the rest of us. And today it's spring, and now the toilet paper crisis has passed. Food security and social mobility issues are foremost in the minds of most. What better to spend your mounds of self and or imposed social isolation time on than growing your own food? Christina Nikolic operates the increasingly busy Organic Gardener's Pantry. She'll be here in the second half. But first, Janine Bancroft and some lessons learned from solitude. Hey, Janine, welcome to the program.
Well, they say that necessity is the mother of invention, Chris. And here we are. Our computers are connected and we're talking to each other virtually. You just live down the road. I can wave at you out the window. Uh-huh. Thank goodness for technology, right? We got to count our blessings. At least thank goodness we have internet right now.
Well, it was supposed to make our lives easier from the very beginning. So, Janine, now, first of all, you went into isolation before anybody else. Well, how long have you been in this self-imposed isolation?
Well, it's been about 20 years now. I mean, really.
Let's take one crisis at a time, please.
Right. No, I mean, it's funny because it turns out that I do enjoy being at home alone, you know? And at first, when I work in the public school system, right? And at first I was kind of laissez-faire. I was like, well, I work with kids all day, you know, I'm not going to worry, but I just wash my hands a lot. And that was on Thursday. And then by Friday, it was sort of clear that, you know, things are changing quite rapidly. So I went to the store and I got a bunch of stuff. And then I sort of thought, you know, I work in the kids in the school with a bunch of kids, and maybe I'm carrying this thing. And so from that perspective, I thought, well, I better just stay at home. I have a bunch of, you know, preventative medicine, immune building medicine, and, you know, herbs and that sort of thing. And I thought, well, I'll just stay home and I'll stay healthy. And then if I start doing symptoms, then I'll have to concern myself. But I didn't, in case I was carrying, I didn't want to go out. So, you know, I went through from the denial, then into the anger and frustration, and I don't want to be here alone by myself. And then I realized, you know what, actually I like being alone here by myself. It's how I live most of my life. So I need to just quit complaining and kind of get on with it. And, you know, people who live in poverty or close to poverty, as I have done throughout much of my adult life, we've already learned how to deal with rationing our food supplies and, you know, creating, you know, cutting up an old t-shirt and using that instead of toilet paper on most occasions, and enjoying just going for a walk is kind of a big deal. So in a sense, I guess I feel like my life has kind of prepared me for this. How about yourself, Chris? How are you doing?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because I mean, there's that kind of isolation that, as you describe, of being entirely alone. But I went out, ventured out into this strange new world today to go down to the grocery store. It's a Sunday here right now, and as we record this, so things are pretty quiet, you know, anyway. But it wasn't eerily post-apocalyptic still in the streets or anything like that, but it was pretty quiet. But when I got to the grocery store, you can tell that there's people are nervous and they really avoid each other when even on the streets, taking wide berths of each other. It's kind of comical, really. But in the store,
They have like a security guard standing posted to ensure that people on queues stand far enough away and nobody, I guess, jumps queue or something. But it's sort of a black-shirted, bald-headed, Mussolini-looking presence, you know. And I found that the isolation was starting to kind of annoy me, that things weren't... I mean, I didn't notice that I was super social or anything in the past, but this kind of enforced separation and unnatural social interaction, I found kind of oppressive and right from the get-go.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we're here for the long haul, unfortunately. I mean, we don't know how long it's going to go on. And they say, the spiritual teachers, that, you know, they all say that you never experience growth or evolution when things are going well, right? Because there's no need. I mean, all of our greatest accomplishments, I think, come when we are forced into a situation where we have to question everything around us and start to look at everything anew. You know, just being able to go outside and walk on a street and look at the flowers in the neighborhood is suddenly become this wonderful thing that I look forward to every day, right?
Yeah, well, I never thought that I would miss strangers quite so much, or at least miss the interaction. And when you mention people being homeless or marginalized, I guess it's a little bit more of a feeling that they must experience, where people, when you encounter them on the sidewalk, take a wide berth around you or don't look you in the eye and don't interact with you, seem that the last thing that they want in the world would be to actually come into physical contact with you.
Right. Yeah. It's a new reality. I mean, I've taken some pretty good long walks. I was at the beach yesterday, Saturday. It was actually quite busy. But people, I noticed, even, you know, they were socializing, but they were definitely the 2 meter distance from each other for the most part. They were doing that. And also, I don't know if you've noticed, but if people do happen to kind of come, you know, as you're walking or whatever, and the dog gets in between you, and you end up sort of closer to a person than you thought you were going to be, and then people are apologizing to each other. I wonder, is that like the most Canadian thing or what?
Well, I wonder if they're apologizing to you or to the virus.
Well,
the virus.
Yeah. Oh, to each other. But, you know, on the plus side, Chris, sorry to interrupt, but I feel like, you know, there is this kind of calm. It's an eerie calm, the quiet. But imagine if you're watching the news at all, which I actually am now. I never watch the news, but I'm curious, you know, the latest updates and that sort of thing on the corporate media. And you see the camera shots of the freeway and stuff at rush hour.
Right.
Nobody on like 1 or 2 cars. I mean, I think the earth must be kind of going, and all the birds and the squirrels are like, what's happening? You know, mm-hmm. Something that the humans are taking a break. And there are already signs around the world of animals sort of venturing into places that they haven't been able to get to before. And, you know, it's kind of, from that perspective, it they're probably celebrating, right?
Well, that's funny, because I'm working up at the university where there's a lot of deer and squirrels, there's been a great lack of people this past week because the university has been closed, of course, and the students, what students remain are in residence, and they've all been packing up and leaving, but driving around the university, the deer are coming out and they're walking, you know, in places where you don't usually see them, down sidewalks rather than just near the edges of the woods and so forth. And maybe I'm reading into their thinking process, but they do seem to be wondering what's going on. Or maybe this is just what they do at night when there's fewer humans around.
Yeah, well, and I wonder however long this is going to go on, and they're going to become more and more comfortable in their new environment, right? And so there's less pollution, and I'm not sure, do you know, are the construction sites, I know there was something about the Site C, the people wanting, thinking like, this is time now, these man camps obviously are not a good place for people to be. Is the kind of major construction projects, are they shutting down, do you know?
I don't know. I, I, I'm not sure about that. A lot of the construction sites have kept running. A lot of businesses are keeping running. It's funny to me what's deemed essential, although we haven't got to that point yet, as far as I'm aware, that government orders are keeping people home and all that haven't happened here. But there is the debate, and my guest last week was talking, she had written an essay that had, or the week before rather, that questioned what is essential and what isn't. And you know, when it comes down to the essential members of our society, it's funny to me that it's the people that are delivering food, that are working as servers in grocery stores, taking care of the elderly, people collecting the garbage. These aren't the people that leap to mind when you think of who are the pinnacle of the social pyramid. The people that we don't maybe need are investment bankers and futures brokers and these kind of people right now. They can afford to stay home, and we can afford to have them stay home.
Well, and, you know, I saw an ad actually that a couple of the larger grocery chains are hiring right now. And I thought, at first I thought, oh, it's not great, you know, so there's going to be jobs for people. But then I realized, actually, they're very low paying jobs, aren't they? I mean, mm-hmm. And, you know, I think places like Amazon is probably doing huge amounts of business, which mm-hmm. is great for Jeff Bezos, I guess. But we all know that he doesn't treat his employees very well. So, yeah, it's, you know, I hope that, I think it's really, people are having to take a really good look at the world, right? You know, we're all so busy, usually we're work, and then we, you know, people looking after their kids or their parents or whoever, and you never have time to really stop and think about what is going on in the world. And I think this is giving people an opportunity to go, well, why is it working like that? And why are these people who, yeah, and now are considered the essential workers, you know, what kind of compensation are they getting, and what kind of safety plan do they have, and that sort of thing. I watched a video today, Chris, with Dr. Greger, and he is a medical doctor who looks at the nutritional science. And there's a video from 2008 that somebody dug up with him talking about the increase of animal agriculture through the ages. So connecting it with major diseases, the plague that was, you know, and but specifically in recent, the last couple hundred years, and the influenza and all the different viruses. And he gets into the whole science about how the virus goes from the animal environment and how it gets into the human environment through the food chain and that sort of thing. And it's fascinating. It's really interesting. And at the very end, the last few minutes, he said, I think it was SARS is when he was talking. And he said, you know, we think this one's bad. If we don't change the way we do, you know, animal agriculture, like, we have to stop cramming animals into these horrific conditions and overusing yeah. antibiotics on them and all yeah. this other stuff that contributes to this. And if we don't, he said, we are going to see a pandemic that is going to shut down the entire global population. And then he says, imagine being locked inside your house for a month, and what kind uh-huh. of supplies are you going to need, and where are you going to get your toilet paper? And I just thought, oh my God, like he totally nailed it there. And if only, you know, we had listened. So again, I think, like, this is an opportunity for us to look at the way we live in relation to all the other species on the planet. And I know you're going to be talking to Christina about gardening in the second half. And I would like to invite people. I think gardening would be a fantastic thing to be able to do right now. And then bring those wonderful veggies in. And now's a great opportunity to look at all the YouTubes about vegan cooking. There's some amazing recipes and cooking sites. And now's a really good time to like experiment and figure out how you're going to get yourselves off the meat and dairy and eggs and into the only way we're going to survive and not have another one of these is if we must get off the animal experiment. It's just, it has failed.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Janine Bancroft, and Janine's an educator and social events publisher, broadcaster. She is the Green Vegan Grandma on YouTube. Her latest video you can find there is called What to Do When There's Nothing to Do. We're talking about just that, the isolation, voluntary, but also soon to coming to a place near you, involuntary isolation. Just on the point you make about the animal agriculture, Janine, I read that the infamous Spanish flu of 1918 was preceded by a livestock a contagion and a mass culling, or I guess I'm not sure if that's the right term to use in that regard, but the killing, the slaughtering of masses of infected animals in China about 6 months ago. The same thing happened with a huge swine kill off there because they had gotten another disease, and the person who was writing the article I read said there was a connection between these mass die-offs. We saw similar with the mad cow disease in England. I don't know that a pandemic followed that, but these things are connected to animal agriculture and not necessarily some conspiracy or testing in militarized labs, as seems to be the popular suggestion right now on the internet.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of scientific based evidence connecting it to specifically to animal agriculture, and Dr. Bernard is another really great source. He's got a little 11-minute video just looking at just influenza, the history of influenza, and specifically chickens and how easily it is to for us all to get sick, just based on the way the animals are treated and processed and all the rest of that. So the good news is, as he says, you know, spinach doesn't have an intestinal tract, which is where these viruses seem to stem from in the animals. So if we just focus on eating the plants and fruits and vegetables and seeds and grains that are plentiful and delicious and nutritious, not only will we be able to reduce climate, the global climate situation, because a third of the Earth's landmass is currently used for animal agriculture, a third of the Earth is used for animal agriculture, for housing the animals, for growing the food that they eat. So we can also start to curb the greenhouse gases as we're moving away from eating them, and then, you know, saving our own lives, and most importantly, I think sparing the lives of these incredible creatures. There's also another new documentary out from Joey Carbstrong, who's a British animal rights activist, and he has put together quite a horrifying look at, it's called Violated, and it looks at the sexual abuse of animals. So, I mean, imagine there's 64 billion land animals every year are slaughtered for food. Now, these are not animals that are naturally breeding. These are animals that are artificially inseminated. So Joey has put together this really freaky look at how, like, humans are basically jacking off animals, all the way from cows to chickens to shrimp, if you can believe it, to bees. I mean, humans are involved in extracting semen and injecting it into the female of the species. He calls that rape, because the animals are not able to be consensual in this process. So every step of the animal agriculture has become horrendous. You know, maybe there was a time when we lived on small farms and we had a goat and a cow and a chicken or whatever, but we are so far from that now. And it's really a time to have a look at that. I mean, if you're going to consume it, you should be able to look at what you're consuming. I'm not afraid to go into anybody's garden and look and see what they're doing in their garden. I've looked in the slaughterhouses, and there's no way I'm putting any of that stuff into my body.
Well, yeah, that's sobering indeed. And you talked that, and you mentioned that there's video resources, to find out about all manner of things. And one of those is your own YouTube page, the Green Vegan Grandma I mentioned earlier. A little more on our current topic, although it's all related, of course, but what to do when there's nothing to do. Well, so you've been in isolation. You didn't answer my question, Janine. How long, like in numbers of days as of this recording, have you been isolating yourself, and what are you doing when there's nothing else to do?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So basically Friday after work, I decided I better just stay in. I did a bit of grocery shopping on Saturday and Sunday and kind of got stocked up. I didn't hoard anything, but I got enough that I'm good for another couple of weeks yet. And since then I'm not even going to the laundry room in my building. I'm doing laundry in my apartment. You know, it's not like I'm having to wear all my work clothes or anything. I'm just, you know, my grubby home clothes, so I can just wash those and rewear those. And I go out for a walk every day, about a 2-hour walk every day. And, just, you know, being careful to keep a distance from people for both of all of our benefit. Right. And then other things that, you know, it's a great time for spring cleaning, Chris. It is springtime. Oh. And yeah. And this is a wonderful thing. You don't have to spend all day doing it, but I find if I take just a section of my apartment, you know, maybe and dust the plant leaves and wash down the walls and clean the windows and, you know, pull the bookshelves off the shelf and dust them off and think about, am I really ever going to read these books? And maybe I could downsize some of them. And the kitchen drawers, right, they all get all that grungy stuff in them. And I do a little bit of that every day. This morning I scrubbed out the shower. You know, that was my day's contribution to that. So I do a bit of that. I do meditation and yoga. I find that's really important. And again, there's really great resources online for that. And just to take a little quiet time away from the electronic devices and away from the news and just to go inside and say, you know, how are you feeling with this? How are you handling it? And stretch the body out. What else am I doing? I'm counting my blessings a lot. You know, I have running water, I have electricity, I have internet, yeah. I can phone my friends, I can Facebook with people.
Well, and that's just because there are other people, you know, maintaining all of these things that are going out, and aren't, I mean, I wonder what the definition of this isolation is. Does it mean just not doing things that you might like to do, or just doing without going to yoga class or going down to the movies or the coffee shop, or this sort of thing? I mean, but still going out to get your essentials, your groceries, and to take a little exercise and such like this, you know, walking around the block. I mean, what do we mean by isolation?
Well, in Spain, they're on lockdown. I have a friend who has family in Spain, and so they can only go out, what did she say, to go to the pharmacy, to go to the grocery store, or to walk the dog. So apparently there's little videos of the same dog going for a walk several times a day, all these different people, right? Yeah, so... But
by Thursday when this airs, who knows what it's going to be like. You know, right now it's voluntary. I a friend of mine, her husband's going to the gym, like, still every day, and I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, that to me, that is not necessary, right? I mean, it's nice to be able to get out and get a bit of fresh air, but to go into a building where there's other people. This thing, you know, still they say more people die of the flu every year. We're still at that point. But the thing about this is that it's highly contagious. It's hugely contagious. And it really affects people with compromised immune systems and older people. And so it's not so much about, yeah, you might be young and fit and you can go to the gym. But then if you're carrying that virus, you can carry it apparently for 14 days. And the nurses and the doctors are overwhelmed. They're just getting overwhelmed. And they're the ones that are saying, please just stay home. Just, you know. And so I think that's the least we can do. And if people don't do that, then we're going to get the lockdown order from the government.
Well, it's, strange days indeed. Well, Janine, we'll look for you. How do we find your page? Do we just go to YouTube and punch in Green Vegan Grandma, or is there an actual address to it that people can write down? Or
Yeah, no, you can find me that way. I started it last year. I got like 10 or 11 videos, I think. It's just kind of a fun project. I'm also on Twitter. Sorry, I'm EnviroVegan on Twitter. And then I'm on the Facebook. And I've been doing a lot of social media. So I'm interested to hear what other people are doing. What else are you doing to keep yourself busy, Chris?
Well, I'm in an essential service, so I've been working crazily, but I'm looking forward to when that winds down a little bit. As I said, I work at the university, but now that it's shutting down, I won't be needed at work, so I'll maybe start doing some spring cleaning.
There you go, and I hope you're cleaning your hands a lot throughout the day when you're handling that stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you're not dealing with people so much as their stuff, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that to keep our gloves handy and wash hands and remember not to touch your face,
right.
Or anybody else's face for that matter. It's funny how often you catch yourself scratching your nose or idly, you know, rubbing your chin when you don't even realize that you have those habits. But there you have it. Well, Janine, thanks a lot. Then we'll look for you at YouTube, Green Vegan Grandma. And thanks for coming on and telling us a little bit about how you're coping with this new and hopefully short-lived reality.
Thank you, Chris. It's good to know you guys are doing all right over there in your world. And I hope you're able to self-isolate soon, and then we'll all get through this together.
All right, then. And of course, this will be the different format because the CFUV is shuttered, as I said, off the top. So, there's a lot of things being changed, some small and some profound. But, it is an opportunity to examine and challenge the way we've been doing things on a regular basis.
Come up with something better. We'll come up with something better for everybody, right?
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Janine. And we'll get back to events someday with you as well, with the Left Coast Events Bulletin when things start happening.
Let's hope so. All right. Take care, Chris.
All right, then. Bye-bye.
1, 2, 3, 4. This is Chris Chandler and Paul Benoit in the great city of Victoria. When I'm here, I listen to All Good News all the time at CFUV. My favorite radio station, because it's independent and alternative media. I consider them the big media. They give you the real story. And when I'm not here, I listen to it online at cfuv.ca.
If I was a crow, I'd fly the roads they wind between these places. Over back lanes and weathered veins where creeks have left their traces. Fruit trees planted long ago still bloom every other season. Fence won't keep the rabbits out. The gate's always open for some damn reason. Place that's worn and storied. At the end of their chain, the Great Lakes strain into the old St. Lawrence. Ah, we've held a party or two, slept a million dreamers who woke to find the coffee on. Though the smoke is gone, the poetry lingers. If you're too clothes off, riding underwater. room. If you're too tucked away and you can't see the sun, if you've something to say but you ain't got no one, whatever you do, if you have to, oh, use your thumb, just get here, just come. Fed and hearts were warm and gracious. Did we keep a guest book somewhere, or are the records fading? We'll make a vow to start one now. There is still time, but it's not waiting.
And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. That was Canada's own Sarah Harmer there. Well, spring has officially sprung. The toilet paper crisis has passed, and food security and social mobility issues are, or soon will be, foremost on all our minds. While the initial shock of the new abnormal has ebbed, the next shoe to drop will be the failure of the supply chain. So what better way to spend your mounds of self and or imposed social isolation time than learning how to garden, how to grow your own food? Christina Nikolic operates the increasingly busy Organic Gardener's Pantry. She also teaches organic horticulture. She is, too, a past director of SOUL, or the Society for Organic Urban Land Care, and spends, she says, what time there is left in the day in the garden, smiling while spreading mulch. Welcome back to the program, Christina.
Hello, Chris.
Well, now, Christina, we're here overlooking a lovely garden instead of talking from the CFU studios, and that's another story we've all heard too much of already. But Christina, can you describe your garden for us, and why someone wanting their own garden should want to perhaps emulate what you've done with yours?
Well, this garden, as you can see, there's hardly any bare soil in sight. The entire garden is either green from the sprouting plants of the spring or brown from last year's leaves, which I've put down in the form of mulch, smiling all the way.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we're waiting now. There's a massive pear tree that dominates the garden. We're waiting for it to bud out, as it does every year, in beautiful white blossoms. Tell me a little bit about the balance of this place and what you've tried to achieve you've been gardening it for how long now?
Oh, I've been gardening this place for a dozen years and more, and the aim is to feed all, not just people, of course people as well, but also birds and bees, insect pollinators, butterflies, the odd raccoon. And so there's many sources of food for many different creatures. We have, for the people, ordinary garden beds. We have a fruit tree or two. We have some cane fruit, such as raspberries. And we also have a lot of habitat and food and nectar for pollinators, for birds, for other wildlife, and for a plethora of insects in the mulch layer on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've started off by painting a picture of disaster with the supply chain breaking down. And food, we've all been to the grocery stores and seen the bare shelves, and people are worried right now. They're afraid. And I'm wondering what my impetus was if I wanted to grow or needed to grow my own food, how would I go about that? The people now, we're far removed from our agricultural roots, most of us.
Yes.
So what would somebody wanting, say they've got a yard, some lawn, or maybe even just a window box, but for somebody who's starting right from scratch and wanting to figure out how they might be able to grow their own food. How on earth do we begin? Where are our first steps?
Well, that's a great analogy about the supply chain, because let's think about the natural supply chains. What makes plants grow? They need sunlight. They need good, fluffy, dark soil. They need water. And they need a few nutrients in the soil. And that's basically what we try to do in the garden by mulching, by selecting the very best real estate of the garden for food plants, because food plants need the sunniest, warmest, most sheltered, best soil that you can find. So in our garden here, we probably only have a quarter of it that is really lends itself well to annual vegetable production. And the sort of more marginal places are better for the fruit trees and the shrubs and the berries. So in those, in that corner, in the northwest corner, where we get lots of good sunlight in the day, we have probably three beds. They might be 5 by 8 feet long, and they feed three parties in this house. There are three tenants living here, and we all share this place, and we have a good amount of food coming out of that space. So you don't need a whole lot of space, but you need to make sure that it has 8 hours of sun a day, and you also need to make sure you can water it reliably every day, because that's going to be two of the prime conditions for growing healthy plants and good food.
So the first thing I do, I look at what land I've got available, and I get a stick or something and go out there and monitor the shadows to see whereabouts I'm getting the most sun. And
Yeah. That's very important. You can still grow some things with less than 8 hours a day. You can grow salad greens and lettuces with maybe 4 to 6 hours, but that's pushing it. So there's no way around. You need the full sun. So if you have a north-facing balcony, there's a limit on what you can grow. But then again, maybe there's a neighbor with a yard that's underutilized, or maybe you can swap with someone in a community plot. Where there's a will, there's a garden, I think.
Well, and what about the actual land, the earth of this place? Maybe it's been neglected for a long time or planted under grass in the worst case, I would imagine, scenario. How do I know that it's even worth trying if I look and the soil is even still alive?
Right. It's also actually a great time to start composting. But since we're talking about gardening, find a good source of organic matter, compost. It can be just last year's leaves if you have some still lying around. They make great mulch to feed the soil. You can buy compost in bags. You can shop around. The city often has piles of last year's fall leaves sitting around in the parks for free pickup. I'm not sure how that is actually panning out this spring. Everything's a little different. But the whole point is smile and spread mulch. Prepare your garden in the fall beforehand. Spread the leaves. Spread the clippings, recycle organic matter and place as much as you can, because that way you're building a sort of a bank account in the garden.
Well, I would think, you know, like springtime is the time to start, but, you know, I guess ideally we're starting before the springtime. This is the planting time. Mm-hmm. Can I just go in like, okay, I want to do this. I want to do this quickly. Can I go rent a rototiller and till up the land and throw in some bean plants and onions or whatever, so that I'm getting food as quickly as possible?
You mentioned the two very promising candidates here. Yes, beans, peas, and onions are actually the easiest to grow that you can grow from seeds or sets. Right now, it's the best. It's already warm enough, and you can grow these broad beans, peas, onion sets, and also you can start planting potatoes. And yes, if all you have is lawn and you have a rototiller, sure, plow it under, plant in there. Or if you have more time, layer a whole lot of organic material and cardboard over top, make a sheet mulch. But that means you have to wait until it's partially broken down. Or, you know, get a garden box and plant in some imported soil. However, I would always recommend that people garden in place in the soil that they have in the garden and amend it with as much compost as they can bring in on their own accord.
Well, why would one want to do that? Why stay with the indigenous, if I can use the term, soil?
Because you have the best chance of tapping into the great wide soil food web. Even in less than ideal soils, there would be still a whole bunch of microorganisms such as bacteria and fungi that support healthy plant growth. So I would always plead for amending the soil that you got rather than importing soil from who knows where and possibly importing weeds or contamination.
What's that term? The soil food web? What is that?
Yeah, the soil is alive underground. The reason plants grow is not because we feed them fertilizers, because they have partnerships with soil bacteria, soil fungi, all sorts of tiny critters in the soil that partner with them. They exchange nutrients. They provide service for each other. And actually, as gardeners, our supply chain is feeding the soil so that the soil can then feed the plants.
Yeah, this is fascinating to me. And I guess for some people, this is a rather novel idea that the earth isn't some inert substance that is just there to cushion or hold blanket a seed. It's an actual living ecosystem unto itself.
Yes, like a teaspoon of soil has more critters living in it than we have people on Earth.
Well, and this is the idea that this comes to this, the idea of organic. Now, in your garden, you're not using pesticides or anything like this yet. You've tried very diligently over these many years to maintain an organic balance here.
Yes, when I first came into this place, there was plastic on the ground and bark mulch over top, and the soil underneath was hard and dead. So I ripped out all the plastic and I spread the bark in a small layer of the bark into the shrub and tree border, and then I just started adding leaves and leaves and leaves every year onto the soil, and now the color has changed. It's dark and black. It's pretty soft. There's tons of earthworms in the soil. Anytime you stick a shovel in the ground, you'll come up with a half dozen earthworms, big and fat ones too. So they convert organic matter into humus, which holds and exchanges nutrients, feeds the plants. And yes, I don't use any pesticides. I do not use any synthetic fertilizers. I sometimes give the garden a bit of liquid seaweed concentrate or some liquid fish or some really well-rotted manure that I composted for at least a year, together with some straw and some grass clippings and what have you. And so basically, if you can over time achieve a self-sustaining system where you have few inputs from outside, that would be ideal. Again, supply chains, we won't be able to rely on cheap veggies from California, or we shouldn't rely also on quick fix solutions from the chemical agriculture industry. So grow your own soil, and the soil will grow your food. This time of year, again, start your seeds indoors if you can, but you can also already plant beans, peas, potatoes, and onions outdoors.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Christina Nicolick. Christina operates the Organic Gardener's Pantry, and she is also a organic horticultural or horticultural teacher and a past director with SOUL, the Society for Organic Urban Land Care. What about this idea of urban land or urban farming? In this time, and again, I keep thinking about, say, the Victory Garden of the war years in the Second War, and the idea that we're at a time right now where we have to start to supply our own needs and the needs of our neighbors rather than depend on the post-war food system that grew up with this monoculture and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I see a great chance right now for even more community building, even more resilience, even more barter systems, perhaps exchanging of favors, swapping of surplus produce. There's some good things about being cooped up at home. We can reach out to what's close to us again. We can revitalize what we have at our fingertips. And our garden, we're lucky. We have something like 2,000 square feet of backyard, because it's an old heritage house, and at that time they provided that much garden space, probably with the understanding at the time that people were self-sufficient and grew their own fruit and vegetables and berries and have you.
And a chicken or two,
and
perhaps.
A chicken or two, that's right. And so nowadays it would be great to utilize that space again, and it's amazing how much variety and how much quality and quantity one can produce, even on a small bed, let alone in a big garden.
Well, as you say, this is a heritage house, and the newer houses now, when they have yards at all that are bigger than postage stamps, they might be devoted more to a rock garden or to a parking lot, more likely.
It's very worrying. I see little bungalows come down on large lots, and then big new houses go up, and the rest of it is paved and covered in concrete. And I just wonder what's happening to that productive soil that has been taken away. What's happening to the water cycle in the city? What happens to habitat? Where do the birds go? What do the insects eat? It's very short-sighted, I think, to increase density to the point that there is no green spaces left.
Well, and well, I think I venture to say we might find that out pretty yeah. quickly to our detriment. What about these people that are living in apartments or are very small yard spaces? What can they do? And I'm thinking here in the sense of growing. Not, I mean, flowers are great too. You need the insects and everything. But if they want to maybe get started, don't have the kind of the luxury of land, but what can they do to sort of get a start here?
They could go to the markets and support their local farmers. We still have an abundance of local organic farms on the peninsula between Sydney and Souk. And as soon as spring hopefully rolls around and markets could open or reopen, there's a lot of ways to get fresh fruit, even if you can't grow your own. A lot of farms have CSAs, which is short for the Community Supported Agriculture, where you can subscribe for a weekly or other weekly delivery of a food box produced locally with the local timely organic food that's in season. And you can also visit places like the Compost Education Center or the Mason Street Farm or Life Cycles, the Horticulture Center of the Pacific, for either growing, buying seeds or starter plants, or for getting tips on how to grow, or indeed to buy locally produced produce.
Well, and where those places are all in Victoria, which is where we're broadcasting from. And mm-hmm. it's been a funny year here. This spring has been very late. It's still quite cool. We're moving into late March, almost April now. And everything seems to have hit a lull. We're not getting the kind of sunshine that we were used to at this time of year.
I remember it was similar to this last year, too. We had a cold sort of frosty March, but then by April everything went right back on track. So this is still, it's still early in the season. It's still time to learn, to get informed, to plan a bit of a garden if you can. Check out GaiaCollege.ca for taking courses if you're interested. West Coast Seeds and Salt Spring Seeds offer local, other local companies offer seeds. Linda Gilkison has some very good knowledge on how to grow and what to grow in this area. And I would say, yeah, it looks like winter is still not quite left, but spring is going to spring very soon, and then everything is going to happen very fast. So this is the perfect time to start the hardiest things, but not get too carried away. Don't worry about getting a head start. Once the soil warms up and the spring is really here, things will catch up quickly, even if you plant a little later.
Well, let's assume then that I do have that luxury of land, but I'm a total novice. I've let my attachment to the earth wither over the generations, as so many of us have. And as you say, the weather is about to warm up. Things are about to get very conducive to growing. And I'm really worried about the collapsing food supply chain. I want to get some. I want to go to my garden and get things started, but I don't have a clue, and I don't even have any tools. I mean, so what do I do now? What's my very first step?
Well, chances are that back in the corner of the garage there might be a rusty shovel sitting around. That's a good start. Or my go-to tool that I use for almost everything is a spade. Keep it nice and sharp and keep it rust-free, and it's going to be
What's the difference between a spade and a shovel?
A shovel has a longer handle and usually a pointed blade, whereas a spade usually looks like a rectangle. And with a spade, in my opinion, you can do things like digging and transplanting better or as well or better as with a shovel, but it's a bit of a personal preference. I also use my digging fork a lot, especially if I don't want to turn the soil completely upside down, just fluff it up and loosening it. Or even as I try to dig and till and plow less and less, I use a cultivator, which is like a three-pronged sort of a couple of claws on a stick that you just use to loosen up the top couple inches of the soil.
But I don't hear rototiller in that. And I think a lot of people think they can go down to the rental place and rent a powered tiller.
Yeah.
And
if you're a farmer, that could be a huge life work time saver and also saves you from backbreaking work. But in your average home backyard garden, I would say you don't need one. Plus, a rototiller destroys a whole lot of the, especially the fungal network, and also is detrimental to the bacterial populations in the soil. So the less we disturb, the better. The earthworms and the soil microorganisms are very, very good at slowly mixing soil and make it fluffy all on their own without us having to do having to run machinery through it.
Well, this is and when you think about the soil being alive and being also the habitat of all of these variety of creatures, many of which we don't even know the names of as of yet, coming down with this massive chewing machine, it's a violent kind of act, really.
It is. It creates a false sense of, the bed is nice and soft and ready for seeds, but very soon that fluffy structure collapses again. So the true soil structure comes from the soil life inside that take the pieces of sand and silt and clay and organic matter and humus and stick them all together and make them into crumbles. And those crumbles then hold air and water in the space between them, in the pores, and that's what makes very good, healthy soil that doesn't really need to be tilled at all.
Well, if my soil is not that great, it's been sitting for a long time, or it's been tormented by people who had wrong ideas about how to grow things. Besides mulching and taking the long way, is there like a shortcut that I can go, that I can take to bring my soil back up to productivity, to feed those living creatures and encourage more of them in the soil, maybe in a bit of a cheat of a quick fix, because I've been programmed to believe in quick fixes.
There's really not a whole lot of quick fixes in nature, but if you are strong and you have a good back and a sharp spade, you are going to be forgiven to do a double dig once, just once, where you take out one trench of soil and set it aside and then loosen with your spade the base, the bottom of that very trench that you just dug, and then move over to the next row, dig out one trench, fill that soil onto where you just dug your first trench, and incorporate a lot of leaves and organic matter and compost as you do, and continue that row by row down the bed. And by doing that once, we do a fairly deep disturbance, but also at the same time we add a lot of organic matter back to the soil, and you are going to be left with, or you're going to achieve, a very ready-made bed to sow seeds and plant plants in. But you don't have to do that every year. It's really kind of a one-off method to deal with compaction. For example, if there used to be grass and it's compacted from trampling on it, then a one-time double dig could be called for. Otherwise, no, don't dig as little as you can get away with. Just loosen the soil as deep as you need to sow seeds or plant plants.
Well, okay, now I'm sure this is different for every type of seed or plant I'm putting in the garden, but I was worried about how deep do I put a seed, and do I just poke a hole in the ground with my finger and drop it in and cover it up, or with a pointed stick, or what?
Yeah, in the case of beans and peas, that's exactly what you do. The smaller the seed, the more shallow it should be planted. So grass seeds you just throw on the ground and put a little bit of light fabric over top and you're done. The rule is to plant as deeply as the seed is thick. So for very fine seed, that means barely cover it with a tiny sprinkling of compost after planting, and that's it. Don't bury them too deeply. They need to get a chance to stick their heads out in due time. And protect from the birds, because if it's too obvious, they will also want a piece of the table. There's a material out there called Rime. It's like a white, fluffy, felty kind of fabric, very soft and won't damage emerging seedlings. And you can suspend that over your freshly planted seeds and starts for the time being, so the birds can leave them alone until they get strong enough.
Like hang it on sticks or something, or leave it just on the surface of the ground?
You could almost leave it on the surface, and when you plant grass, you often do that. Or you could suspend it on little hoops, or you know, by with sticks around the length of the bed.
And how do I know how much water to put in? I don't want to put these little seeds in and then drown them. But I mean, I guess I'm going to have to put, you know, water.
That's right. I often see that people watering from hoses with a very sharp sort of nozzle at the end that actually is going to wash away all the seeds. So go for something that is as soft as you can. Emulate the rain. A watering can with a nice spray on at the end is at the spout is perfectly good. Or one of these hose attachments where you can select the shower function and then give a gentle shower morning and night, and unless it rains, of course, and that's really all you need to do.
Because of, you know, I keep going back to this, that we keep wanting to speed things up, so act like nature times 10 or something like
true,
this, you know,
true.
And I guess the advice is to watch nature, because these plants have evolved to respond to the way nature acts.
Precisely. And there's no need for you to become a full-fledged permaculture farmer in one season. Nobody does that. But remember that most food plants are fairly short-lived. For example, you could sow some seeds for lettuces and carrots and beets and radishes every few weeks, every 2 or 3 weeks. So you sow a small amount, harvest it when it's ready, and then sow again, because that way you can get several harvests of the shorter lived crops in one season.
Well, this is all very good, and it's all a lot to take in. And I see that the cat is getting impatient with us as well. Christina, before we go then, now, how can people follow up on this and get information at their leisure, and maybe something that breaks things down more simply, you know, into an ABC kind of thing that people like me might require?
Right, yeah. So before we feed the cat, take a note to visit the websites for Gaia College, for the Compost Education Center, for West Coast Seeds, and for Salt Spring Seeds. Have a look at Linda Gilkison's page. Even Helen Chestnut in the Times Colonist has a really useful gardening column. Talk to people that sell at markets. Talk to your neighbors. Check out Gaia College. I think I said that 3 times by now. And don't be afraid of just doing it. You don't need to know everything before you start. In fact, we never really know everything about gardening. There's always more to learn. There's always more varieties coming out. The climate is changing. There's so many factors. Just start small. Get yourself a pack of peas, snow peas or shelling peas, and stick them in the ground right now and watch them grow.
Well, don't be afraid. Embrace uncertainty. We certainly have that in spades. Thanks a lot, Christina, for coming on and talking to us about that today, eh?
I'll go back and mulch my garden now.
All right, and keep smiling. And thanks to Janine Bancroft and all the good people in their separate little dwellings right now at CFUV, struggling to keep the shows on the road, so to speak, in this new abnormality that we're going through right now, and hopefully will not be going through for very much longer. There's great programming coming up, you know that as always, but that's all I have. Until the next time.